is 1A. I'm Todd Zwillick in Washington. On a night in 2015, during a big party weekend at Boston University, two students from another school, MIT, entered a BU student dorm. At some point, while they were in the building, one of them went into the room of a female BU student and sexually assaulted her. Now, the dorm has a security desk, it has security guards, and it also has rules. But despite all that, the male MIT student was still able to assault the BU woman. So she sued. Boston University, the victim said, had a responsibility to take measures to protect her from the assault, and it failed. Well, this case and others like it have opened up a new dilemma on campuses all across America. How much responsibility do universities have to protect students from harm? After all, the vast majority of college students are young adults. It also has parents questioning how they can be sure that their children, adults, yes, but still growing up, are in a safe environment when they're at school. Boston University declined to join us for this discussion, as this is an ongoing case, but we heard from a lot of you. Here's Katrina in Tennessee.
When I was at MTSU in the late 80s, early 90s, I was flashed and followed by a gentleman while I was running on the campus. And when I called campus police, I was scolded for being at the track by myself. That was my experience with campus security 20, 30 years ago. So I hope it's improved.
Has it improved? We're going to get into that. Joining now from WBUR, which is owned by Boston University, is Boston Globe contributor Nubba Khan. Nubba, welcome.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Nubba is currently a student at BU and, by the way, a former intern here at 1A. So it's great to have you, Nubba.
It's great to be here.
Well, tell us about what happened at Boston University that's drawn so much attention to the college's campus security policies. What exactly is this lawsuit all about?
So this lawsuit stems from the assault of a BU student on campus, as you mentioned, in October of 2015. And she lived in Stuvey 2, which is this high-rise apartment-style dormitory here at Boston University. On that night, two men from MIT left their host after being checked into the dorm as guests, officially. And according to court documents, the two of them walked through the residential floors with no cameras and opened unlocked doors. They entered at least 11 rooms on 7 different floors of the dormitory. And then at around 2:45 a.m., one of those men entered the apartment and then the room of a BU junior and sexually assaulted her. And now that student, Jane Doe, is suing Boston University and saying that they did not keep her safe and that they gave her a false sense of security.
Tell me a little bit more about the substance of her complaint. What exactly is she accusing the college of failing to do?
So it is one breach of contract claim and one negligence claim, which essentially means, and then negligence claims against individual administrators. So she's suing the school as a whole and then individual top administrators, basically saying that they gave her a false sense of security and that they didn't enforce security policies that could have kept her safe, such as automatically locking door locks and the guest policy.
And what has Boston University said?
Boston University has been, well, in their motions to dismiss the case as a whole, has basically been saying it is not our responsibility to keep you safe. An exact quote from them is that the university made no definite or certain promise to keep students safe and that Jane Doe was given the tools to ensure her safety and elected not to use them.
Given the tools to assure her safety, what did they mean?
A door lock.
She was in the room. She could have locked the door, but the door was open.
Basically, that is her that is their argument.
Okay, so the door had a lock on it. You chose not to use the lock, therefore don't hold us responsible, even
though... Of her individual bedroom, yeah.
Of her even though this guy shouldn't have been in the building in the first place.
And ultimately, it was her roommate who left the suite door unlocked. She shared, like, an apartment-style suite. But they're still saying you should have locked your bedroom door.
How is the national conversation affecting what's going on there in Boston?
I mean, I think it definitely does have a huge impact. We've seen a trend recently in the past couple of years of a lot of these colleges kind of assuaging that responsibility. And so we're trying to see, is that going to be the new legal standard? There's a huge swell of support from the colleges themselves nationally about how this is not, they are not parents, and in loco parentis is over.
Sure, they don't. They don't want to be the ones held responsible
exactly.
when bad things happen. I guess that makes that's unsurprising. I'll say that.
But when you talk about all of this Title IX regulation that we've been having recently, I mean, it does put it in an interesting light because we are all talking about how this is a huge problem.
No, we certainly are going to talk about that. Look, has campus security on campus at Boston University demonstrably changed? I get the university is in court saying we're not legally responsible, but they might also turn around and say, we better make sure this doesn't happen again.
So when I was reporting on this, the school declined to comment to me as well. Yesterday, I noticed an article had been posted to the school's website from the police department explaining ways to keep safe on campus and emphasizing that you should lock your doors. But as far as I know, there has been no official response, and I haven't seen any significant changes.
Now, we're hearing from lots of listeners already. We're getting a great deal of interest in this story and in other cases like it on campuses across the country. We got this comment from Wes who said, an unescorted guest shouldn't be a thing in a college dormitory. Shame on Boston University. A pretty simple point of view, Nubba, but is it as simple as that to a lot of people?
So the complication with the guest policy is it's actually one of the big arguments that's happening right now in this case. And when it goes to trial, it will be a big point of contention is the school's official guest policy is that you do have to be accompanying your guest at all times. But the argument here is obviously in this specific case, these two people were unaccompanied. So at what point is it the school's responsibility to make sure that's being enforced? And Jane Doe is saying that it is absolutely their responsibility to ensure that those rules are followed.
Complicated. I mean, there certainly appears, from my distance, to have been a failure for these two unaccompanied people to be in the dorm late at night, unescorted against policy in the first place. And then the university turns around and says, that notwithstanding, you could have locked your door like any person in any house on any street in America. Your door has a lock. Use it.
Mm-hmm. That is essentially what they are saying.
Yeah, and a complicated debate. We got this from Bridget on Facebook. My son's dorm room locks behind you. You can't get out without a, you can get out without a key, but you can't get in without a key. Pretty simple fix.
So that's the other huge argument that's happening in this case is the argument over the door locks. So in Stuvey 2, because it's an apartment-style dorm, in a lot of the case depositions, school officials were talking about how it's supposed to be more about choice and adult choices. And so the doors in Stuvey 2 do not automatically lock. And some doors on campus do in some of the larger residences.
I mean, we've mentioned so many listeners have simple fixes, and we keep mentioning them. But wouldn't a school turn around and say, well, fine, the next time we refit this dorm, automatic locks, no more arguments?
Maybe, but the legal arguments there are a little complicated. So if they were to do that, it might change some things legally as well. But that is a huge facet of the case.
All right, we're going to take a break. Where do we see this case going? How long before we get a decision from the courts and some direction on who's responsible?
A trial date is actually being set today. So hopefully we will know soon when that timeline will happen.
So a trial date set today?
They're meeting to set the trial date.
A few months before the trial starts and then some answers at least from the courts in Boston and Massachusetts. Other courts, including the United States Supreme Court, have taken up similar questions to a sexual assault brought against Boston University. It's raised a debate all across America, and many of you are chiming in here on 1A, speaking with Nubba Khan, contributor at the Boston Globe and former intern here at 1A. Nubba, thank you for your reporting. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
You're listening to 1A from WAMU and NPR.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Uber. Uber is committed to safety and to continuously raising the bar to help make safer journeys for everyone. For starters, all drivers are background checked before their first ride and screened on an ongoing basis. And now, Uber has introduced a brand new safety feature called Ride Check, which can detect if a trip goes unusually off course and check in to provide support. To learn more about Uber's commitment to safety, visit uber.com/safety.
Do you talk about the news with your friends, your family, or perfect strangers? Get the facts you need to be up to speed on this busy news cycle so you can share what you know. On the News Roundup, find the podcast in your feed every Friday.
Who was Qasem Soleimani? and what exactly was his role in Iran? This week on Throughline, how the assassinated Iranian general and the organization he represented have shaped the relationship between the U.S. and Iran for decades. That's this week on Throughline from NPR, the podcast where we go back in time to understand the present.
Welcome back to 1A. I'm Todd Zwillick. We're talking about the role of college campuses and security in keeping college students safe when they're at school. Whose responsibility is it? We're going to add two more voices to this conversation now. John Vinson is the president of the International Association of Campus Law Enforcement Administrators. John, welcome to 1A.
Thank you very much for having me.
Great to have you. And Jeffrey Beeler is here. He's a partner at the Massachusetts law firm of Heinlein, Beeler, Mingase, and Heinemann. Jeffrey, welcome to you.
Thank you for having me.
Well, John, from the International Association of Campus Law Enforcement Administrators, what's your perspective on how much responsibility a campus has for an adult student safety, and even who's to blame when safety's breached?
Again, thank you very much for the question. First off, I'd like to offer condolences to the family and friends of the victim of the sexual assault and to that campus community that was affected. We know these crimes have a chilling effect on the community at large, and my heart goes out to the student identified as Jane Doe. But when we think about the responsibility as a whole, the goal is to ensure that these campus police and public safety agencies that are mostly full-service agencies ensure that they have highly trained personnel in crime prevention, response, investigative strategies, as well as community policing strategies. So the goal is to work with the various members of the campus community in a collaborative way to ensure that safe environment for all.
But at the bottom line, when your officers and the people in your line of work are patrolling and coming up with security policies, I know they want to keep everybody safe. Any decent human would want to do that. But the bottom line, if something goes wrong, it's your responsibility, it's the dean's responsibility, or it's the students'?
Again, when we think about responsibility, one of the things that we don't want to do is blame students for becoming a victim of a crime. Oftentimes, when we think about crimes in general, we like to think about if something happens, how can we as a university or college community work to assess if there are failures in a process, and more importantly, are there things that we can do to improve those processes? Yeah. But again, it's a collaborative approach in terms of working with the public safety department, the dean of students, and any other constituents on campus to assess and or evaluate where those failures occurred, and then more importantly, come up with a strategy to improve upon those failures.
And very important to say, I think you raised an important point. When we talk about who's responsible after an assault in the legal sense, none of this is intended to imply that the victim has any responsibility for the assault. We're talking about whether the university itself can be legally held responsible for the security breach. And I want to make that very, very clear. What about campuses across the country, John? Is there any one standard for campus security, or is it more of a mosaic, a patchwork? Is every school different?
Yes, every school is different, but when we think about IACLEA, our goal is to specialize in advancing and articulating best practices, considering the campus public safety profession as a whole. So when we think about the work that we do, our goal is to sort of advocate what are some of those best practices out there, and then more importantly, whether or not those individual campuses can adopt them to meet the needs of their respective campus or college communities.
Do you find that schools listen when your organization comes with best practices? Because I'm going to guess they're not cheap.
Yes, I believe that overall, most of our, if not all of our campus public safety agencies, they're highly trained, and our number one goal is to make sure we have a safe environment for outstanding academic learning.
Well, Jeffrey Beeler, I'm glad you're here. You were an attorney in a case, Wynn versus MIT in 2018, that raised similar questions about the role of a college in protecting its students. What was Wynn versus MIT all about?
Wen versus MIT was about the second leading cause of death of college students across the country, student suicide, which takes the lives of between 1,100 and 1,350 students a year. The case was about the responsibility of colleges and universities to prevent student suicides when they have noticed that a student is at risk of self-harm.
And what did the court ultimately decide?
The court ultimately decided when a student is known to have previously attempted suicide recently or shortly before matriculation, or is talking about committing suicide and has a plan, that the school then must meet its duty of care. And then it laid out essentially what would be expected in connection with that duty of care. The first thing that the court laid out was if the school has suicide prevention protocols and policies in place, they must be employed at that point in time. Secondarily, if the school does not have those policies and practices in place, they're expected to put the student in contact with appropriate mental health supports. And lastly, and I would suggest pretty significantly, the court said that if the students are unwilling to comply with those terms, the schools are required to reach out to emergency contacts, which are frequently, of course, the parents. And one of the biggest complaints that I have had in the number of cases I've brought involving student suicides is that the first time the parents became aware that their student was having problems was when they got the phone call to tell them that their student was dead. And what Wen said is that is not going to be acceptable anymore in Massachusetts.
Now, let's get practical, John. Your members patrol these campuses, and they care a lot about security. I don't expect you to argue loco parentis here on the air, but what's the attitude among administrators and security experts who patrol these campuses? Is it that we have, and I know it's collaborative, I know you want to say that, but is it that we have a sort of a responsibility to protect students, or is it the alternate, as Jeffrey describes, that we're bystanders, essentially, and this is a pawn that I don't own, and you're 19, and you're an adult, and I'll do my best, but ultimately, your responsibility?
A very good question. The goal, when we talk about, again, the campus public safety, we do everything we can to ensure the safety of all. For example, many of our universities have safety apps, so we do extensive community outreach. We offer a self-defense training and other type of intensive community engagement and or crime prevention training for our students. The fact of the matter is we try to treat them as adults. We try to ensure that they understand what resources they have at their disposal when they come to our campus communities. But our goal when we think about overall safety is to ensure that they have all the resources at their disposal to be able to respond and or address any concerns that may arise. But more importantly, the campus public safety departments are there to help and guide them as well.
Okay. Well, one group that has a huge stake in this conversation, of course, is parents. And we heard from a lot of you. Here's what some of you left in our inbox.
This is Kathleen. I am extremely satisfied with University of New Haven's direction for safety on campus with our daughter attending there. They orient the parents to all the options that the students have, including an app that allows the police to watch them walk between buildings if it's late at night.
Hi, this is Akua from Herndon, Virginia. I do remember being in high school when Columbine happened, and that was terrifying, but it seemed like a one-off. But now that I'm out of college and I have a family, it directs my choices so much so that we've sent our children to smaller private schools.
My name is Debbie, and I'm calling because when my daughter was a freshman at Drexel University, we were a bit concerned when we got a call that she and some friends had been at an off-campus party that they didn't belong at. We were in touch with the university, and the university could not have been better at talking with us and assuring us about the situation and what was going to be done.
Now, Jeffrey, there was one parent of a Drexel student who, yeah, thought they were a little surprised. The college calling to say your daughter's at an off-campus party.
The issue about this is reasonable care under the circumstances. That is the standard that these college or these cases are trying to establish for colleges and universities. And it is a flexible standard that, of course, is evaluated given the particular facts. I don't know what particular facts that particular school had that prompted some administrator to make up or to make the decision to pick up the phone to call that parent. But I expect that there's more behind the story than just out of the blue there's a call saying your daughter's going to an outside a party, because that type of call, at least in my experience, would be unusual without there being more of a backstory there.
We got this from Michael, who says, when I was in school, I participated in work study that escorted students from building to building after dark. We even had a car taking off-campus students to their homes. This was back in the 90s. And Julian tweeted, some people who are not students but live near campus also feel threatened by the way schools do security. At the University of Chicago, the police force's jurisdiction extends way beyond the boundaries of where students live and study. In the Bronx, Fordham University is a fortress. We're going to talk a lot more about campus security and who's responsible. Speaking with me are John Vinson, president of the International Association of Campus Law Enforcement Administrators, and Jeffrey Beeler. He's a lawyer. He was counsel in the case of Wynn versus MIT. I'm Todd Zwillick. You're listening to 1A. We'll be right back.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from the Walton Family Foundation, where opportunity takes root. More information is available at waltonfamilyfoundation.org.
Here's some good news. Morning Edition from NPR News isn't just for morning people. Now you can hear every story from the start, weekdays 7 till 3. Listen on your schedule. Just say, Alexa, play Morning Edition.
Well, back now to our conversation on safety on college campuses. What is the responsibility of colleges to keep students safe? The answers are not simple when campus security varies drastically across the country. We heard from a lot of you about your experiences with campus safety.
Hi, my name is Megan. When I went to school in North Carolina, I was in a very physically abusive relationship. There would be nights when I was screaming so loud in my dorm room, screaming for my life, and campus security never came to check on me. One day, I was able to escape from my dorm room, and I ran outside, and I pressed a blue light on campus, and it took campus security 30 minutes to respond to my blue light. And I know that because I watched them respond to the blue light from back inside, because by the time they got there, it was already too late.
John Vinson, I'm going to assume that Megan's story is horrific to you, but I know you have best practices, but with the rules different in every state and the rules different at every university, how can parents and students going to a campus have any reassurance that the college takes their security seriously?
Campus public safety, again, we strive on student safety, making that environment safe for all of them to live, work, and study. And one of the ways in which we can continue to ensure that sort of comfort is, again, through the ongoing training that our team members, our public safety officials, gain over the course of their careers, the consistent community outreach engagement programs that we offer, and more importantly, providing ways in which we communicate with the parents. For example, I know many of our institutions have parent orientation, as was mentioned, and members from the public safety or police department get up and talk to the parents about what those services are and how we can work again together to ensure that the students are safe when they're there. But I think it just requires all of us to continue to work not only with our students, but our other campus partners to ensure that they really understand what all of those services are, but more importantly, that the public safety department, police departments, is integrated into the fabric of the college and or university community in a proactive way.
Okay, that's important. Outreach to parents and accessibility for parents and students to be able to talk about security. We got this tweet from Brenda, who said, back in the old days, when I was at college, my criminology professor told us to be wary of universities that did not do a good job of reporting violent crime. If people aren't aware, they lower their guard. And as a college parent, I noticed that many colleges are not forthcoming. John, is that a concern? I can definitely see a motivation of a college campus, if there's a crime problem on campus, to not necessarily advertise it to parents and students because it doesn't look good.
Well, I think our goal is to increase awareness. So again, I'm not sure there's any desire to keep crimes quiet or not report. Our goal is to make sure our students, faculty and staff, and parents are aware of what's happening so that they can exercise extra due care and caution when they are out and about on campus. So that's one of the things that we try to do, is make sure that our community member knows what's happening on and around the campus from a crime standpoint, so that they can be more prepared, and our crime prevention tips help them sort of respond to possible crimes if they're faced with them.
Jeffrey, what has been your experience? I know you take cases like this to court, but you've dealt with a lot of different universities. Before crime happens, or before a student is assaulted or a tragic suicide takes place, what's the variation you've seen in universities' openness to be open and clear about crime and about security on their campuses?
Well, starting off with the student suicide issue, they're not required to report how many suicides they've had within any given amount of time, and they are quite opaque in connection with that information. In order to get it, oftentimes you need to file a suit and go through subpoenas and do some digging at various public record holders and try to piece the story together yourself, which is problematic because, at least as it relates to that concern about students, if the institution itself is not keeping track of those numbers, they have no way of benchmarking themselves against what should be the statistical norms to figure out whether they're doing a good or bad job at addressing those mental health risks that their students are facing at ever-increasing numbers.
And Jeffrey, let's get back to the issue of sexual assault, because it's a huge issue on campuses across the country. How effective, maybe there's no one answer for this because we've already established that every college is different and maybe that's part of the problem, but how effective are universities at communicating to women that they take their security seriously and being clear to women about what they can do to help protect themselves and help protect their community?
I think that women on college campuses get many mixed signals from their colleges and universities, and I don't think you need to go any further than the record in the BU case to establish that fact. Like most colleges, what happens within university housing is that efforts are made to create a community feel. They want people to be friendly. They want people to be safe. They want to have this feeling that they belong. They encourage open doors, putting their names on doors, so it became easy in that case for the two assailants to target, as I understand it, 11 doors which housed females before they finally found a victim in the Jane Doe case. All of that is designed by the institutions in order to have this internal healthy community, which is great, wonderful goal. But if you're going to have that and encourage people to leave doors unlocked, encourage people to, you know, be friendly with their neighbors and so on, you need to make sure that your perimeter security works.
All right, let's make sure that we hear from the people with the most at stake in this entire debate, the students themselves.
I'm Noah, and I'm from Michigan, but I go to college at Columbia College, and it's generally pretty safe there. We actually get emails like every night about people who are like shot somewhere or robbed.
This is Rachel. I'm currently going to MTech in Spanish Fork in their cosmetology department, and we don't have any security on campus. I would have loved to have some security on campus because recently there was a situation with a student where she was threatening and yelling at other students and instructors.
Hi, my name is Vanessa. I'm in Salem, Oregon. To be honest, as a person of color and a woman of color, no, I don't feel safe on campus. Campus safety actually allows the state police to do drills on campus, and as a person of color, the police in general haven't always been kind to us.
Hi, my name is Shannon. I'm a student at the University of Denver. On campus, a lot of survivors of gender violence have felt blamed by campus safety. I think that this is a really important conversation to be had, especially because campus safety isn't representative of the campuses they serve. They have very few female officers and very few officers of color.
Now, John, what's your response to Vanessa and Shannon? Vanessa makes it very clear that as a woman of color on her campus, relations have been poor. She does not feel protected or safe among the police that are tasked to protect her. And Shannon makes it clear that when it comes to sexual assault, there is a history on her campus of not being taken seriously.
Again, Ayaclea, we prioritize effective approaches to sexual assault investigations through various training programs, and we try to focus on trauma-informed sexual assault investigative strategies, which sort of allows us to sort of really address some of those concerns that were expressed. So our goal is to really ensure there's a victim-centered approach, and we take all of these sexual assault complaints very seriously and investigate them very thoroughly through our highly trained team members at our respective departments.
Tell me what that means, trauma-centered response that you mentioned. What does that mean to the student?
It really means that we listen to their complaints. We don't question whether or not they're if there's any concerns with their complaints, we want to make sure that we rely on them to help us decide how we proceed. So we want to make sure that when they are suffering from some type of allegation or complaint, they come to us and we listen to them and we're responding to them in a victim-centered way, not in an accusatory way.
There's another issue that I want to make sure we get to before we go, and it's guns on campus. John, there are campuses across the country, states that are moving to make it easier to carry on campus. Desmond tweeted, "You are responsible for your own safety, but the gun-free zone campus makes the university 100% responsible because you now cannot defend yourself." I guess in Desmond's case, he can't carry on campus. What's the impact on how your people do their jobs?
Again, every state is different, so that we have to be sort of responsive to what the law requires. If a particular state allows for guns to be carried on campus, then the public safety department would train accordingly and ensure that the campus community understand what those parameters are around carrying concealed weapons on or around the campuses. So again, each state and our campus community is on a case-by-case basis.
Jeffrey Christina tweeted this, "To what extent is the student host who signed in the MIT student as a guest responsible for his or her guest actions?"
I think they could have potential responsibility, but the lawyers who brought that particular case chose not to pursue that particular theory against that defendant. But so, it is something that could potentially be pursued based on the fact that that student presumably had agreed by virtue of their attendance at the school to comply with the practices, policies,
so,
and procedures,
Jeffrey,
of the school.
Take just 30 seconds. We got to go, but tell me where you think this area of law is headed.
I believe that it is headed to a place where colleges and universities across the country are going to owe the same duty of reasonable care under the circumstances that virtually every other corporation and every other person owes in connection with their daily activities or their operations. To the extent they have historically had types of immunity from being as responsible as the rest of us, I think the time is now for that to end, and that is the focus of many of these cases.
That is Jeffrey Beeler, partner at the Massachusetts law firm of Heinlein, Beeler, Mingase, and Heinemann, and was counsel in the case of Wynn versus MIT. Jeffrey, thank you for making time. Thanks for your expertise.
Thank you for having me.
And John Vinson, thanks to you, president of the International Association of Campus Law Enforcement Administrators. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me as well.
Last word here goes to Steve, who said most colleges require the students to live on campus. Therefore, the college is responsible for safety. That's what Steve has to say. Remember, you can follow all the behind-the-scenes photos of how we make this show on Instagram. You can follow us at The 1A Show. This conversation was produced by Haley Blassingame and edited by Matthew Simonson. To learn more about them and the rest of the team, visit the1a.org. This program comes to you from WAMU, part of American University in Washington. It's distributed by NPR. Until we meet again, I'm Todd Zwillick. Thank you so much for being with us. This is 1A.